Please note that this podcast is intended to give advice to ostomates. The information given is based on personal experiences and should not be taken as clinical advice. Please consult with your stoma care nurse if you are in need of medical advice. So, hi, and welcome to season 2, episode 4 of the Let's Talk podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Pelican Healthcare, a manufacturing company of stoma care products and accessories. They are the manufacturer of the Moda V. If you wish to sample any products, then head to www.pelicanhealthcare.co.uk. And today I have Danny Kelly, DC versus UC, with me, and I have Rachel, who goes under Gutsy Mum, and then there's me, Louise, and at Crohn's Fighting. Tonight we're going to be talking about gym fitness and just overall body health in general. You do tend to see a lot on social media, especially across some of the groups and stuff, about the amount of weight that you can gain after stoma surgery. I know from personal experience that going in for surgery at 11 stone and then 2 years down the line ending up at 15 stone and going, holy cow, I better do something about it. I think that's when I started, when Crohn's fight and got fat. And I think that's when I first started talking to Danny, because when I started going to the gym, he was messaging me about tips and stuff on like the treadmill and the bits and pieces I was doing. And obviously I've met Rachel through social media and in person, and along with both of us advocating for Pelican Healthcare. So Danny is an avid gym goer. Rachel likes to run, and I'm not allowed to go to the gym anymore, so I have to deal with walking for miles. And I think it's a good fit to have high intensity, mid intensity versus low intensity to talk about things. And I mean, what about you, Rachel? Because obviously I always see you out training with your running and everything else on Instagram. I'm like, you're crazy.
Yeah, I actually never ran before I had my ostomy surgery, funnily enough. It was having it that kind of made me think, you know what, why wasn't I doing this before? Because I wasn't in pain the whole time. I was in chronic pain with my surgery needed to be doing for like 5 years before. But even before then, I wasn't running. I used to be go to the gym 3-4 times a day, do like classes and flip a few tires and, you know, resistance training, all that. But I just found something very freeing about running. I think the stoma surgery finally got me out of living in chronic pain every day. And the running was kind of just like a release mentally from that, and kind of a euphoric thing. I don't want to sound too like hippie, but it really was. The first few times I ran and I wasn't in pain, I literally was on cloud nine. It was like a drug. I literally became addicted to it. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I can actually do this. It was just an unbelievable feeling.
I don't know. I find it crazy because I know not last year, just before lockdown here, I started the Couch to 5K, and I actually got to the last week of it. And then I was pushing somebody in a wheelchair that was probably double my weight with a wheelchair that wasn't working properly, and I busted my knee. So I kind of stopped the Couch to 5K after that. And I was actually quite annoyed at the time. But I think the thing is, because when I was in my teens, I used to run cross country for KCC, which is obviously the Kent County Council for the school. And I was really good at that. But then I started smoking, and then I got ill.
Yes.
And then I think the thing that we struggle with, especially like being ill and obviously having bad days with the fatigue and everything else, I think it can be quite difficult at times to actually get yourself, especially when you're unwell, into a routine of getting fit. And obviously you've got the thing of like when you've lost a lot of weight because you're ill, I think you just automatically assume that you're not going to gain anything back. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of easy to fall into a false sense of security about maybe your weight and your body image until they start whacking you full of meds. But I mean, what about you, Danny? Because I mean, you've been on and off at the gym for years, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, there's been some differences. So, you know, I started going years and years ago, but didn't always, I don't say take it too seriously, because in my head I probably was at the time, but maybe it was just lack of education. So it's easy to go into a gym, sit on some machines and do different things and then walk out and feel almost good about yourself, and then wonder 6-7 months later why you don't see any difference. And like you say, if you become ill in that time, you actually go backwards. And you can't help that, because, you know, suffering with a chronic illness, at some point you are going to feel that. So, you know, it took me probably only been the last 3 years really that I've actually looked into it, took it seriously, took advice, you know, gone through some qualifications myself, looked into diet, that I've actually figured out what works for me. Because before that, I was literally just winging it and trying everything I could, but that was, can have a adverse effect on you. Yeah, you know what, physically you feel good because you've been, you exercise, but mentally you start to struggle because you don't see a difference, which means you will stop going as much, and then, you know, physically it starts to drop off. And you know, I've had two instances where I've actually really put a lot of weight on, felt really good about myself, and then had a slight case of food poisoning, which, because I don't have a large intestine or a colon, has developed into something serious. Kidney failure, all sorts. And then, you know, I'm in hospital, and everything I've put on in the space of 3 or 4 months is gone in a week. So it's that simple to just drop everything off. And it's easy to say, try and stay healthy. That's what people say to me all the time, stay healthy. It's not like it's intentional. You know, we don't intentionally end up unwell. We don't intentionally lose that weight. It's just, unfortunately, part of life.
It can be quite disheartening though, isn't it? Because you kind of like, you get yourself fit, you feel healthy, you get yourself into a routine, and then something just literally comes back and bites you in the butt, quite literally.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, like you, the amount of times I've ended up in hospital with dehydration and acute kidney failure because my stoma just doesn't stop. And it's like a never-ending cycle, because, like, with me, because of the amount of output that I have, there's no control in it other than meds. Diet doesn't work. Dioralite doesn't help. Imodium doesn't touch the sides, so they've got me on high dosage of codeine, and that the codeine isn't for pain, it's to control my stoma. And the thing is, I've never actually got used to the amount of codeine that I take. It still knocks me out. I still have days where I'll take it and I'll be absolutely spaced for the entire day, and it's like struggling and trying to find that mentality and that kind of push that you need to get yourself out to do something. And I think the thing is as well, it has such a massive impact on your mental health as well.
Yeah, it does, massively. Like you say, because you, especially if you do see some results and you feel good or you feel healthy and you start to wake up every day thinking, I actually feel better, you know, then the effects that can have on you mentally are amazing. You know, you feel so much better in yourself. And then, like you say, something knocks you back, something what seems so simple as stoma output. But then everything you've worked hard for months and months and months is gone in the space of days or maybe weeks. So it can be extremely demoralizing. And it's, like you say, your mental health can really struggle with it.
And I found the thing that shocked me more is when I get ill, when it's not stoma related, because I kind of forget that I'm also a person with all my other organs like everyone else. Same as you, Danny, I haven't got any large intestine. So I got COVID in February for the first time. And up until then, I got up to 16K runs and I was training to do the Cardiff half. And I got COVID and it completely wiped me out, my fitness, my stamina. I never had a problem with my chest. I've got an inhaler now. And I've gained a stone in weight since, because I haven't been able to train the way I did. And mentally, I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do? You know, it gets you into that really dark place. Well, not really dark, but, you know, you just think, well, you know, that motivation and that kind of enthusiasm, you had it for it all before. Oh, I wish I could have bottled it. But as soon as you get such a knockback, and, you know, it is just like you said, it's like you've lost all that work, all that effort. Yeah, and it's hard to get it back, isn't it? It's a difficult one.
Obviously, I had a flare-up back in October, and obviously I'd had the Mirena put in like the May. Then they'd put me on they'd put me on pregabalin. Then I had a small dose of steroids because of my stoma. And in the space of between October to January, I'd gained back 2.5 stone. And okay, admittedly, I probably shouldn't have been sitting down on a Friday night and eating Galaxy's family-sized chocolate bars. But you get into that routine. And the thing is, if I wasn't doing as much walking or as much hiking as what I did, I probably would have gained back more. And now I'm trying to lose it, but it does have a detrimental impact, not so much on my body image, because, you know, I'm happy with the fact that I've got a stoma. I can't change it. It's something that I've wrapped my head around. But doing what we do as with regards to like raising awareness and advocacy, you know, you've got a lot of people that are skinny minis or are quite buff and are quite young in their age and good with their bodies. And then obviously us, obviously not to say that we're old, but obviously we're getting to middle age. And we're not getting old, are we? But
slow down a second now, love. But how old are you two? Because I've only just turned 33.
Well, I'm 37 this year.
Oh, well, you're talking about you, Pear, then, aren't you?
40 in 2 weeks' time, so.
Ooh, yeah, but you do not look like it, so you don't need to worry.
And that's assuming I make it past Saturday.
Yeah. But, you know, you get to the point of, obviously, I'd spent the best part of 2 years losing like 5.5 stone. And then to gain back such a small amount of that, you know, near enough half of that in the period of 4 months, that's absolutely crazy. And I know that some of it was out of my control, but it takes a lot longer to lose it than it does to gain it. And it's a never ending circle, I feel, with us. It's like, Danny, like you say, you know, you spend ages bulking yourself up, then you get told at your GPs and at the hospital that your BMI is well over and your weight is well over, and you're like, but it's not, it's all muscle. So how can you define me by?
Yeah, I mean, I'm clinically obese. I'm, you know, 15 stone, 5'11", and I am classed as clinically obese on that BMI scale.
But it's a hard thing to swallow sometimes, isn't it? Being told that you're overweight, but you know you're not overweight. And, you know, for me, I'm lucky. Obviously, I'm tall. I'm 5'7", so I can always get away with carrying a bit of extra weight. But it's like a never-ending cycle. And then we have the hernia risks, and not to mention other risks with regards to our stoma when exercising. I mean, Danny, you train people, but how do you find that? Because you've had a lot going on, but you still managed to try and stick to your routine and stick to the gym and stick to your goals. How have you overcome that?
I have to. I think it's something that I learned a long time ago, that if that's the one thing I have each day that's done for me, then that's the one thing I'm going to do each day. So, you know, when I'm in there, you know, 90% of the time I'm in there with my son, he trains with me, I train him. And so it works out well. You know, part of the motivation I have now is him, because of the difference in his body compared to what it was 6 months ago. So that in itself is motivation for me. And, you know, we go our separate ways at times, and he's off doing his thing, I'll do mine. Headphones go in, and that's the time I need. I need that time. So, you know, I'm at work probably from 7 a.m. till 6 p.m, sometimes 7 o'clock in the evening. By the time I come home, have a bite to eat, get changed, we're up the gym for 8:30. That's my time to switch off. Come home, have a shower, go to bed, and repeat. And at the weekend, like you say, how busy I am at the weekend. I have 3 kids with me at the weekend, so there's not that time to just sit and relax and do your own thing. So that's, to me, that is my outlet, and that's the way I try to make it stay. So no matter how unwell I'm feeling, or how tired, or how pained, I try to stick to that as much as I can, because mentally I need it more than physically.
Says the man that's bruised himself this week.
We're not going to talk about that.
The thing is, I think there's always the presumption, isn't there, that when you've had stoma surgery, that's the end of life. According to some medical professionals, I mean, some of the things that we see in the papers and online is very much, oh, you've having stoma surgery, that's it. You can't do anything. You can't have fun. You can't live your life. You can't do this. You can't do that. But then there's so many of us that are obviously proving that statement, that kind of bubble wrong. And it's just like, everyone's like, well, how do you get back into fitness? Where do you start? Well, it's as simple as, I was talking to somebody the other day that's just had their barbie butt surgery. They've had a really, really hard time of it. And Jerome, if you are listening, I hope you're feeling a bit better now. But there's just a lot of onus put on the fact that you can't do things. And you're kind of like, well, I can do things. If I can get through this, then I can do something else. Because when you have surgery, we don't only lose fat, we lose muscle as well, where you're laid up and you're not exercising. How do you get back into things? Because it's like little things like, well, how do I manage to have a shower 4 weeks post-op without feeling out of breath? How do I manage to get out of the sleeping routine that I've got into post-op, because I'm still drugged up to the eyeballs and I just haven't got any motivation? But we all have to start somewhere, don't we? Whether that's a small walk, whether that's walking down the flight of stairs at home and getting to the bottom and then getting back up to the top, or where do you start out? Because I think everyone focuses so much on diet.
Yeah.
And it's not just diet, is it?
I tell you one thing, I find that, like, it's only a year after my surgery that I started doing things like core exercises, because I was so worried about getting a hernia. And before I went into surgery, you know, I'd never had any issues with hernias or anything like that at all. But just, I don't know, like in the booklets you have after surgery, and I remember the stoma nurses go, you know, the main risk is a hernia. And it was like such, made out to be such a big, scary thing. And I know it's not nice and whatever, but I found that it didn't give me the confidence to try things and push myself, whereas I wish I had sooner. Because I remember I started going for walks after a couple of weeks, and then I started running after about 6 weeks. It was only a year later that I've started doing these like boot camp sessions, these military fitness boot camp sessions. And oh my God, the feeling after, when you've done things like that, when you really push yourself, is amazing. And you think, oh, why wasn't I doing that sooner? You know, I've got my support way. I've got my waistbands I trust and use. I'm a sensible person. You know, I just think sometimes you can be a bit scared into not trying things and pushing things.
But I think the nightmare, that the leaflet, that booklet that you'll have been given, will be the same one I was given, the same one millions of others have been given. How can they give instruction and define what's healthy for you to do and assume it's going to be the same for what I do?
Yeah,
you're exactly. Completely unique to you. Mine is completely unique to me. The surgery you went through had a completely different effect on you to what the surgery did on me. So for somebody to just say after surgery, he has an NHS leaflet, read that and don't do what it tells you not to do on that booklet. That could be from the age of, from being a child up to being elderly. There's such a massive range between this one little leaflet with all these instructions. And I always say to people, there's only one person who knows your body, and it's you. And if you go into the gym and start doing something and feel uncomfortable, then stop. Do something else.
Yeah.
The things you can do in there that are going to make you feel better, make you feel healthy. But if one thing makes you uncomfortable, there'll be something that doesn't. So you're right. All these, don't do this, don't do that. It's, you know, I would never tell anybody to put themselves at risk. But what I would say is, you know your body better than anybody. You feel it. But if something, you feel it. When you go to run, you feel it. Nobody else does.
Well, my 6-year-old, he's got a feeding tube and he's got an ileostomy like me. And he scares the life into his teachers in school because he rolls on his stomach down the hills. He'll, like, you know, play fight with his mates. He does everything the same as all the other kids in his class. And when he first started, they'd be like, oh my God, we couldn't watch. Oh my God, we thought he was going to hurt himself. And I was like, yeah, but as much as you need to watch him and make sure he doesn't hurt himself, he will also tell you, and it will be very clear if he isn't comfortable and if it's not right for him. Like if he did roly-polies down a hill and it hurt, he wouldn't do it again. So even at that age, he was learning his limits. So, you know, and no doctor or nurse told him, right, Jake, now you can go down that Teletubby hill in that schoolyard, but you can't do that thing over in that park. So it's all relative, isn't it?
It is all relative, because the thing is, yeah, hernias are a risk, but you're either predisposed to them or you're not. Not everybody that has stoma surgery that does exercise will get a hernia. I mean, what am I? So I'm 13 years in. The first 3 years of having a stoma, I did not exercise other than walk the dog and walk Maisie to and from nursery, because I had a massive incisional hernia. It was absolutely horrendous. And I looked like I was 6 months pregnant, but it was something that I couldn't control, because it was something that was done to me. It wasn't something that I caused. It was something that was done to me. And then when I had my reconstruction surgery, I had two hernias repaired when I had my reconstruction. After my reconstruction, I developed another two hernias, but that was all along my midline, because the mesh that they put in at me at the time, because of the amount of weight that I lost, the mesh shifted. So the mesh shifted over to one side, which is why my right side was more predisposed to having hernias. When I had my stoma placed again in 2016, I had those hernias repaired. They put in more mesh, and touch wood, since then, I've not had an issue. I haven't developed another hernia, because my surgeon did the surgery properly, put the mesh in where it was meant to go. So I didn't have those issues again. And don't get me wrong, for the first like 18 months after my surgery in 2016, I wore hernia support wear all the time. And you know what? I can't flaming stand it. I absolutely hate it. I do not, because I spent 3 years wearing fat pants to tuck in the huge hernia that I did have, being forced to wear something like that, it always makes me feel constricted, and it always makes me feel like I can't breathe. It's kind of like invoked an anxiety in me. Now, don't get me wrong, I will wear my belts when I take the dog out hiking on a Sunday, because I'm up down and down mountain. I will wear my belt just because it secures my bag to my body, and it just gives me that kind of comfort of where I'm obviously jumping over ditches or walking and crossing through rivers to get through to the other side. It just gives me that sense of security. But I never wore the hernia support wear when I went to the gym, because I was only ever on the treadmill or on a static bike. I was either doing, what's it called? Spin. I was doing spin class. I was on the treadmill, or I was doing weights, but I was only doing upper body. So it didn't make sense to me to wear something, because obviously I wasn't doing the core exercises, because I have no core. So I didn't feel like I was at risk of doing that. But you've also got to learn how to pick things up, right? Because the thing is, with a hernia, it can be caused as something as simple as getting the flu and coughing, and the pressure of putting that through, or lifting something up wrong. It's why we're meant to bend at our knees and drop down rather than bend over and stand back up, because you're not positioning your body correct. And like Danny at the gym, he trains people, so he gives them the correct posture and what to do. But Danny has a stoma, so he knows what he's talking about. Whereas there are a lot of trainers in the gym that when you go in and say, oh, I have a stoma, two, I don't have any core muscles, I only have my side muscles, they look at you like your head's come off and it's just exploded. Oh, yeah. When you're like asking for advice on what to do.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with them is as well, a lot of the personal trainers like to be the best at what they do. That's the nature of the person who wants to be a personal trainer. So if you challenge that, it's going to make them massively uncomfortable immediately. And the chances are they're probably not going to want to help, for the right reasons in their own mind, they can't help. But the egotistical size of doing that particular job won't allow them to admit they can't help. So it's very difficult. I've been lucky, you know, the guy who's trained me in the past, I chatted to him first and explained the situation. And in truth, when we first started, yeah, he probably was a little bit scared and a bit daunted. But the further we got in, he was watching me. So from watching what I was doing, he would just randomly stop me and say, you know what, let's stop this and try something else. So by him watching and letting me go, he's learning from what I'm doing. It actually helped me in the long run. be able to do what I do safely. So you will struggle to find somebody with that time or even desire to help you when it comes to something complicated as not having any core muscles or being a major risk of hernias. Because, you know, on the flip side of it, I understand one side of these guys have got insurance policies and stuff, and they take somebody on and something goes wrong. That fear that, you know, repercussions wise towards them. And then, you know, you've got that name of, oh, this guy give this person a hernia. So it's understandable in the way, but I think if you're going to be in a role such as that, you need to be diverse and learn and understand. I don't think there's enough of that around. I've done a PT course and there's no mention of this kind of thing. I've been through the whole thing. I've been through the qualification and there's literally no mention of training people with stomas or, you know, risk of hernias. There's risk of hernia in there, but that's a generic thing for everybody who trains. It's not specifically aimed at those with a potential disability.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, whether in your training any of that was covered.
None of it.
I think that's the thing, though. It's assumed because whether we see ourselves as disabled or not, yes, we do have a disability, but I think it's just automatically assumed that because you are part disabled or you have a disability, that therefore you shouldn't be in the gym or that you don't qualify to be able to get fit. It seems quite ludicrous in a way, because how many people with fibromyalgia, arthritis, anybody that's got anything wrong with them, they're recommended to a physio that is actually, you know, basically a personal trainer that deals with that sort of thing and recommends the exercises that you can and can't do.
You know, I mean, one thing that surprised me as well through, well, not so much through lockdowns, but a lot of the time when I see stoma companies advertising like exercise sessions and virtual events and that, it's always just yoga. It's always like loads of old people doing yoga or Pilates, and you're like,
but don't actually underestimate yoga.
Oh, I'm not underestimating it. I understand the importance of it, but for someone like me who finds it so boring, and yeah, I
giggle. I've been dragged to a couple of yoga classes with my best friend and I can't do it, because if somebody does something or even breathes the wrong way, that's it. I'm in fits of giggles.
I just find it so mind-numbing. I mean, I wish I was more disciplined and I could just get on with it and do it, because I know the benefits and that, but I just find it's really boring. I want like intense, I want to feel like I've been run over at the end of a workout, basically, to feel like I've done something. But yeah, it's always like really slow, low level stuff. And I get that when you've just had surgery, but it would be cool if there was stuff that was more intense and more, you know, like upper body stuff. And I don't know, I just think that side of things still isn't quite appropriate for people other than retirement age sometimes.
Well, the thing is, you do have to be careful. So I've got pretty decent leg strength. My leg muscles, that is the one thing that I have going for me. And was it after my... Yes, it was. Was it after my stoma surgery? I can't remember if it was after my stoma surgery or just before. And I thought I'd be funny. And me and Ben were prattin' about... my mum doesn't know about this. She thinks I've done it some other way. I've never told her this, so she doesn't listen to this, so we're all good, because else I'll get clouted around the head. I thought I'd be funny and go to Ben, oh, cool, my leg strength, I'm going to bench press you with my legs. I ripped my scar tissue. It was brutal, yet I managed to go bowling that night. And I got up the next morning and I couldn't get out of bed. I was crawling. And like Danny said, like with the bruise, I had massive bruise on my right hand side along my pelvic scar. And happened to go to hospital and explain that I was in serious pain and couldn't walk because I decided to bench press my other half with my legs. That's how I ripped my scar.
I bet they didn't believe you.
No, they didn't believe. I think they did believe me, but oh man, I couldn't walk for 2 weeks. It was so bad. I've learnt my lesson. I'd obviously never try and bench press anything above my husband's weight again. But nobody tells you that you can cause damage. And I'm the kind of person that once I put my mind to it, that's it, I'm doing it, I'm off. But the thing is, because of the amount of injuries that I have caused myself, and obviously because I've got arthritis and I knackered my knee when I was pushing the old fella in the wheelchair, my knee's never been the same since. So that's why I don't go to the gym anymore. And I've obviously been recommended to do more kind of like low intensity stuff. But that's the thing. I want nothing more than to get back into the gym. But I know within 6, 8, 12 weeks of being there, I'm going to cause myself an injury and then end back out of it again for 3 to 4 months because I'll cause myself an injury. And, you know, a lot of people go, oh, you can't lose weight walking. Ah, you can't do this walking. Yeah, you can if you know how far you're going. I mean, I average on the best part of like Monday to Friday, I average 7-8 miles a day with a dog. And obviously, Sammy's got terrier in him. He can go and go for miles. I found his limit. His limit's about 15 miles before he turns around and says, are you having a freaking laugh with me? But it's like what I do, but it clears my mental health as well. Being able to stick my headphones in and listen to an audiobook and just get out into the fresh air for a couple of hours and just to kind of like feel knackered and feel like I've done something. But like, if you are getting into hiking and stuff, you need to get decent footwear. You need to go and get your feet measured. You need to get decent hiking boots and, you know, a pair of decent hiking boots that aren't going to make your feet hurt, you know, best part of 200 quid. I've got Solomon's, but I only wear those in the winter. Or being able to find a pair of like decent walking trainers. So like my go-to are like Adidas Clouds. I've gone through a fair pair of those in the last sort of 4 or 5 years. But obviously when I wear them, it's summer, they're breathable. But that's the thing as well, because when you do start walking, especially going for like long miles, it's like anything like you do with like jogging or like weightlifting, you get blisters. You will get blisters. Your toes do split. And obviously you've got the issues with shin splints as well. But it's just kind of something that you kind of have to push through and kind of get through to get to where I am now, where I could go out for a 20-mile hike and I wouldn't think twice about my ending up with blisters when I get home. So
yeah. How Danny, how have you been preparing for Saturday then?
Well, I prepared quite well and spent, because I don't do a lot of cardio, so what I did do was some interval stuff. So I was trying to build up ropes, so battle ropes, and then pushing sleds, pulling sleds. So it was intense. I was trying to do a minute exercise and build up to about 15 exercises without a break. So I'd do a minute's worth of pull-ups into a minute's worth of leg raises, straight into press-ups, into, you know, pushing the sled, pulling the sled, battle ropes. And I was doing really well. And then I started a new job, and they unfortunately insisted on taking me to Portugal last week. So that's
a shame.
Oh, I feel so sorry for you. Yeah,
absolutely awful. But you know, I don't drink so much. I'm not really much of a drinker. And I had a conversation with one of the guys by, I think it was Wednesday evening. He says, "You told me you don't drink." I said, "Let me tell you something. So far this year, I've had about 35 pints of beer, and I've had 32 of them in the last 3 days. So everything I've done leading up to this Saturday, it's not. I wouldn't, the strength's still there. But I got back late Friday night from Portugal. I went in the gym on Saturday morning. I did about 8 pull-ups, fell to the floor in a pool of sweat off 8 press-ups. So I'm working on it. But yeah, last week did cost me dearly, because I'm just not used to
it. Nice, that's terrible.
I'm not used to the bad food. I'm not used to the alcohol content. And it was a busy old week. But I went back in on Sunday, felt a lot better. Went in last night again, feeling stronger, a bit fitter. We did a lot of the interval stuff. I'd put a video up the other day about getting back to it. Did a lot of, a lot of the interval stuff and a lot of core exercises. I'm not going to be fit. I keep telling people this. I'm not fit. I'm strong. So when it comes to Saturday morning, the reason I've been doing the core stuff and the, the sleds and the battle ropes is not really going to have to run too far. So it's 15K. But I think the longest you will run at any one time is about 3K and the rest of it. So in that 15K, you've got 30 obstacles. So in truth, it's going to be more intense obstacles than cardio. So I think I'll be all right. I've tried 3 or 4 different ways to prepare for it. And I make this mistake almost every time I do one of these things. And the way to prepare for this is just to go in and have some fun, in all honesty. You know, you need a level of fitness, you need some strength, but enjoy it. Because if you go in there too intense to one of these events and you just want to really, you know, smash it out of the park, you're going to find it tough. Because with the greatest of fitness and strength levels, it's hard work to run through 2 straight miles of knee-deep mud.
Yeah. That's
you can really train yourself to do in a gym. So the only way to train yourself to do it is to train yourself mentally to think, I'm just going to have fun when I hit something, rather than, you know, think I'm going to run through that. Then you get there and you hit a wall and you realize that you ain't moving, or you've lost a trainer and now you're running barefoot for the rest of the bloody event. So
you go back for the trainer, or do you just think, right, I just got to carry on?
If it's in 2 foot of mud and there's 500 people behind me, I'm just going to run ahead and worry. But you can't feel your feet by the time you've done about 5 mile anyway.
So. No, I really want to do one. It's on my bucket list to do one. Yeah. I really want to do one.
The first one was hell. Second one, we had fun. We had a laugh, no pressure. And the third one was a bit of a mixture of both. Now, this one is very different because we had 9 people, 10 people. They've all backed out. So there's literally me and my brother doing it, which it's a team event. You need people to get through this. You need a team to get through this. So two of us, it's going to be interesting. It'll be interesting.
Tell you what, pay for my flight and a hotel and a massage after, and buy me some nice trainers and I'll come and do it with you.
I would have done, but you've called me old twice on this call. Oh, no.
My husband's 42, so you're not as old as him, so don't worry, you're fine.
Yeah, here again, that's a backhanded compliment. You are not...
I don't know.
I'm gonna shut up now.
I keep looking at doing the moonlight hike and the one for Macmillan Cancer, but I either get the notifications and it's too late, or I get the notification well advanced and I forget to do it. But it's something that I want to do, but I don't know if the dog will cope. I don't know if the dog would be able to do 30 miles over, I think it's 24 hours that they give it, they give you, and obviously you have a sleepover like camping in between. Mm. But I just kind of find that the walking and the hiking just kind of works better for me, just trying to keep obviously some sort of level of fitness up before my legs do completely give way.
You've got to do what's best for you, haven't you? It doesn't matter what it is. It's you'd be insensible about it. Like you said, if you went in the gym and you did what you know doesn't work before, you wouldn't even be able to be walking like you are. So you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, switch it up. But like I say, this is my motivation. That's been my motivation for the last 6 months. And when this is over, my motivation changes because September comes around and there's a half marathon in there. So I have enough to keep me going till towards the end of the year.
I mean, what are your guys' thoughts on like HIIT training, the interval training, the high intensity?
I've done it. I enjoy it. But it's not something I think I could do on a weekly basis because I get bored of it. Because, you know, we've done the... There's a great guy in the gym, unfortunately doesn't work there anymore, and he was doing these real high, intense classes. And I did 3 weeks in a row, and I was getting so much better at these things 3 weeks in a row, and then he moved on and he changed it. But when he changed it, he made it repetitive the same each week. He switched it up. So if it's the same thing each week, I'll get bored of it and I'll lose interest very quickly. So it works. But you've got to remember, you know, everybody who says you won't lose weight if you walk, you won't lose weight if you do this, if you do that. If you want to lose weight, you burn more than you eat. Simple. That's the simple formula. There's no other way to look at it than the fact that...
That's the thing. I on average burn about 700 to 800 calories a day just by walking.
But it's how much you consume. So calorie deficit is the only way you're going to lose weight. If you consume 2,000 calories of food in a day, then burn 3,000. That's literally, it's just how it works. You've got to burn more than you eat if you want to lose weight. If you want to maintain weight, then try and burn around the same amount or eat a little bit more than you're burning. It's that simple. It sounds simple and it can't be that simple, but it is.
Yeah, it is. We all know what it is. It's having the discipline and the motivation to do it, isn't it? It's like since having COVID, I was like, right, can't run as well anymore. I can't breathe properly when I'm running. I'm just going to sulk. I'm just going to eat crap. And I'm just going to wait until I magically feel better. And then I'm not surprised that I've gained weight. I don't like it, but I also know why. It doesn't take, you know, a scientist to guess why. But we all know what we need to do, don't we? It's just having a kick up the backside to do it, isn't it? And having that motivation. But like you, I'm doing a half in October. So, I mean, summer's just flying for me. I can't believe we're in July soon. It ain't going to be long until September comes, I tell you. So, yeah. It'll be here before we know it.
I have a half marathon training plan, in truth. And it actually, when I looked at it, it's almost like kind of an insult to my what should be my fitness levels, but I'm still going to stick to it. I'm going to stick to it day by day, word for word, to make sure that when I hit that point, I'm comfortable doing it. I'm not going to jump ahead of it. I'll literally, because I have this, even though it is, like I say, a very beginner's half marathon training plan, it works out perfectly from about a week after Tough Mud, if I start then, to 2 weeks before the half marathon. So, because for some reason, I have a funny feeling after Saturday, I'll not want to exercise for a few days.
So when you've done that on Saturday, do you take a break? Do you just do low intensity? What do you do?
I don't. It's hard. I won't know until afterwards, because with the greatest of will, I'd love to say I relax and not go anywhere near a gym for 3 or 4 days. But I have this real, I'm going to use the word stupidity, that doesn't allow me to stop when injured or when hurt or when something should do. So I would take an educated guess that by Monday I'll be back in there, but it'll just be on the upper body side of things. And then I'll continue on a few light sessions through the week. And the thing is, I kind of have a break, which I'm going to hope to use. I just hope it works, because I have this weekend. Following weekend is when I turn 40. Following weekend, me and my son go away because he's finished his exams. I'll have just turned 40, so we're off Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Don't come back till Tuesday to over to Holland, Belgium, and a few other places. So the sensible thing for me to do would be to just wait until I get back. But I'm not known for the sensible thing, so we'll see.
Yeah, I'm on my diet and my hiking until the 18th of July. I'm out of the country 18th until the 20th. Come the 21st, I'll be packing. 22nd, I'm back out of the country for a very long-awaited first holiday abroad in 2.5-3 years, thanks to COVID. And then I'll get back to things. But I'm also moving in that period as well. Honest to God, I swear I'm absolutely crazy. I'm doing it the other way around this time. So when I first moved into where we are now, we moved and then we flew out in 2 days. We moved on Saturday, flew out on Monday. This time with somebody's coming in to pack the house down whilst we're on holiday. So we're going to come back from holiday and literally be living on mattresses and takeaways for 2 days and then moving on the Monday. And I'm just like, I must be certifiably insane. But let's clear up a few other fallacies as well, because we do see this, and there's never too a stupid question to ask. But how many times have we heard that by doing exercise, by going swimming, even having a bath or a shower, that your bag is literally going to slide off? That obviously, not to mention obviously as well that sweating can cause infections under your base plate, and obviously can lead to yeast infections and bacterial infections and stuff like that. It can happen, but if it does happen, it tends to be because you're not using the right appliance for yourself. There's why there's such a wide variety of appliances on the market. That's why you have flange extenders, barrier rings, barrier sprays, barrier creams, not to mention two-piece bags, one-piece bags. Because obviously, Rachel, you use two-piece, don't you?
I've actually recently switched to one-piece after only ever using two. And I just had this thing in my head where I just always felt more secure using a two-piece. I don't know why. But it just wasn't working for me anymore. So I thought, right, okay, I'll switch. And I have, and touch wood, it has been better for me. But that whole thing of when you do exercise and that, your bag comes off, I found the opposite, like the heat, the body heat, and that just, I don't know, it doesn't make mine come off. I've never had that problem. Even when I was running up to 16K, my bag never gave me any issues, any problems. No. Not at all. So I'm lucky. I've never experienced anything like that, really.
I mean, I've only ever had one incident, and thankfully I packed other bags. But the first time I went on holiday after my surgery in 2016, can't obviously mention the name of the bag, but I went on holiday and I thought, oh, I'll use that because it looks nice, it's okay. And literally the first day of using it, obviously down at the swimming pool, had a shower, put a clean bag on, woke up at 3 a.m. and reached under the blanket, because I think it's something that we all automatically do as ostomates. When you wake up in the middle of the night, the first thing you do is feel your stoma, because you're like, oh, if I'm awake and if it's ballooned or anything, and obviously I can get up and empty it. And I was like, there's no bag. Where's the bag?
No.
I was waking Ben up with my other hand at 3 a.m. because obviously I know that's touch bare stoma, so I don't know what's on it. So pushing in with the other
hand. Oh, God.
The bag somewhere wrapped up in the duvet, free stoma for God knows how long. But lesson learned, if you are going on holiday and if you are using sun cream, make sure that you do not put it in or around your stoma site. If you are, at least give it an inch around the base plate. And that if you are using after sun or having a bag-free shower, do not put the after sun on your stoma site, because anything that you use, any moisturizers around your stoma site, means that the bag's not going to adhere properly. So yeah, anybody planning to go on holiday anytime soon, wise words, because having to explain Spanish in stilted Spanish the next morning to the housekeeping that your missus is disabled and that she hasn't decided to do an Amber Heard. It was the fact that stoma bag had come off. Jesus. But yeah, there's always this fallacy, isn't there? I mean, Danny, I mean, how long does your bag last you, like with the gym and everything else? Because obviously I'm assuming you get pretty sweaty.
2 days. So I'd rarely anything less than 2 days. So so 3 tough mud has not one leak during them at all. And all I will have is the bag, flange extenders, and some high-waisted support boxes to hold it in place. That's it. And I've never had a single leak during any one of them. So touch wood again this weekend. That again becomes the least of my problems. And when I'm in the gym, so them high intensity classes I mentioned earlier on, I would go home and change that.
Yeah.
No, do you like sweaty bag?
I mean, obviously I have a really hairy stomach as well, so I have to keep on top of that, because the hairier my stomach gets, the more it's gonna leak. And when it gets all hot and sweaty, like you say, it's harder to get off when there's hair there. So I have to remember to keep kind of shaving around that area as well. So
your skin get irritated then if you're shaving it all the time, and then how do you manage that?
Well, it did. So I changed what I did. So instead of shaving with a razor, I actually use clippers. So I take it down real close with a pair of clippers, and then that way it doesn't get irritated. I'm not shaving the hair completely off.
See, these are things I'll have to find out from people like yourself when my boy gets older, because I cannot help it with stuff like that.
From a perspective, do you ever suffer with ingrown hairs or anything with obviously like having to shave your stoma site?
Can do a little bit, but not very often. If it happens, then it's not on the level that it's painful or bad. It tends to be when I take the bag off, I can see that they're there, and you know, I'll tweeze as and out they come. It's not so bad. The one thing I would say is, if you are going to use clippers around that area, don't nip your stomach, because it'll bleed.
Can you imagine?
It doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. Don't be wrong. It's dead. There's no nerves in it.
But yeah, I know. But oh God!
Imagine taking your bag off and just blood everywhere. Like, oh my God. But yeah, there is always this fallacy, isn't there, that exercise is going to affect your bag and your stoma site, and I found it hasn't.
When I'm in the gym, it's never on my mind at all. At first, you know, years ago, the first year, of course, I'm checking constantly. But now, I don't even look at it. It doesn't occur to me whatsoever to check that I'm safe.
I used to go out running with a backpack, and my husband used to laugh at me, and I used to go out with like a few stoma bag changes and a toilet roll and like loads of stuff, thinking I'm going to have to change the bag. And then I got to a point where I literally just take...
But Rachel, you say that though, the whole thing like going out jogging or like when like Danny's at the gym, obviously there's toilets there, but if you're going out jogging... Or if you're going out hiking, 9 times out of 10, there's not going to be a toilet in sight unless you happen to be walking on the pub crawl route that I like to call it.
No, I've a few times I've had to, say if we're out in a wood somewhere or something, I've had the itch and had to change my bag. I'll just get someone, whoever's with me, to like cover me, like, and I'll just go near a tree or whatever, and I'll just whip my bag off, change it. And I got it. I've been changing Jake Stoma bag for 6 years now, my own for two. I can pretty much do it in like 30 seconds. I got it down to pretty quick. So that's fine. But when Jake was like about four or whatever, I remember doing it once in Penarth, which is in South Wales. And I was like, Jake, just stand by there for me, bud. Just make sure no one sees mummy what she's doing. And then some people walked up and he went, it's okay. My mummy's just changing her stoma bag. You can walk past. Literally.
Thankfully, because I've got the dog, I've always got poo bags with me and I always take tissue with me. I don't quite take a loo roll with me, but I've always, you know, like the little, you know, like the tissues, the blow your nose tissues, you get them in the little packs. I always take one of those with me because it's just so much easier to be able to empty into a bag, clean yourself up, and then just obviously get rid of that bag and the dog poo bins on your walks. So, like, your stoma shouldn't hold you back from doing what you want to do. Should it?
No, definitely not. And it never will, in truth. But it's one of them. You speak to a lot of people. It's one of those easier said than done. Not everybody has the confidence, and not everybody has that mental stability in themselves to be comfortable with it. And I know a lot of people who wouldn't change a stoma bag in public, even out in the woods in the middle of nowhere. They still live in that fear. So I think it's. But the perception is changing a lot these days. There's a lot more positivity out there. There's a lot more people doing these type of things. So, I got a lot of messages over the last few days, people asking similar questions. How do you do this? And every time I put a video up of some form of crazy exercise, people always ask their questions, and then it always develops into something more. So it's nice to be able to tell people, just don't worry. The more you worry, the more you panic, the more you sit pressing this thing and pulling at this thing and checking it's all right, the worse it's going to be.
Yeah, it is normal to feel that nervous, though, to start out in the beginning, especially in the early days. It's you would never feel wrong for feeling slightly neurotic or checking things. It's just something that you do get used to. It's a sixth sense. It's like knowing that we've had a leak. It's like that itch that you get that signifies that your bag really needs changing. Don't ever ignore the itch. It's an intuitive sign. Don't ignore it. But it's like flange extenders. Dan, I know you use them, but Rach, do you? Because I've never understood the fascination with them, and I hate the word flange as well. So just be me.
You're so mature for a podcast host. I don't know. I suppose I don't ever have problems with my base plate coming away from the outside in. And I always think as soon as I feel the slightest bit that my bag's going to leak, I get it off anyway. So I don't really place much importance on them. But when Jake was a baby and he was losing 4 litres of stool a day, they were a lifesaver. So they have a place, as everything does. But for me, I've never really used them, to be honest.
I only on events such as Saturday. I don't use them on a daily basis.
Yeah. If I was going to do a Tough Mudder, that, you know, then I would probably think, you know what, I'm going to use every little thing I have in my ammo to make sure that doesn't happen. So, yeah, definitely. I definitely would in that circumstance.
Yeah, I think for me, from personal experience, and obviously having as high output as what I have, the only thing I use is a barrier ring, because the barrier ring just literally stops my output from breaking down the base plate, because the base plate is always the first thing to go, isn't it? It's designed to obviously catch the stool and everything else. But if you have incredibly high output that's not thick, it just does literally eat away at the hydrocolloid bit, you know, like when you take your bag off and you've had it on for a few days, you're like, oh, that's going a bit see-through. But it's like flange extenders, because I've tried them like swimming, and I found, like, if I go swimming or if I go to an aerobics class, that's the only time that I will ever change my bag, just because sometimes the base plate can go a bit gooey, and obviously me and chlorine, I don't know if you guys have noticed the same, but I tend to have like a bit of a reaction around my base plate.
Yeah.
In with the chlorine. So I always
a bag will not stay on after I've been in a pool. Like, I don't, when people say, oh yeah, wait, I can go swimming, I can do this, I can do that thing, well, there's something wrong with me then, because I can't. I just know that after I've been swimming wherever, I just change it. And yeah,
it's like going on holiday for a week, because I know I'm going to be snorkeling in the sea, and because obviously we've got a swimming pool and everything else, I will literally take enough bags that I would normally use for a month, because I normally change every 3 to 4 days. Whilst I'm on holiday, I'm going to be changing daily. It just makes more sense. And because I always get a reaction to the chlorine with my skin, it's just better just to change it and just to keep an eye on things, mm-hmm. rather than just to leave it and then just end up in a situation that I could have prevented. But that's another one to get into as well after having surgery. If you want something soft and something less strenuous, go swimming, because you can swim at your own pace. It's and plus it's nice to feel like you're weightless as well.
Yeah, especially when you put on that weight.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm thin again. Wow. Yeah.
Then you get out. But that's the thing as well, because a lot of people say about the changing rooms and swimming pools, go to the toilet in a swimming pool to change your bag, or see if you can get into the disabled cubicle, because they're not, you know, they're a lot bigger, or use the family changing cubicle.
Yeah, we do that. I always do that, because if we go as a family, it's me and Jake that I need to change a bag of after swimming. So you've got a kid that's like, oh, I'm wet and cold, and he needs his bag changing, whilst I'm wet and cold and need my bag changing, and it's an absolute nightmare. And I find that they never have enough cubicles. I hate swimming because of that. It's just when we're swimming, it's lovely, but the afterwards is a nightmare.
Yeah, I think the thing is, everyone assumes that stoma life is restrictive. It shouldn't be restrictive. It's like diet as well. So obviously a lot of us gain weight after surgery because we assume that we can only have a bland beige diet. And obviously this isn't dietary advice. There's always a disclaimer with this, but there's a lot of people with a stoma that can eat nuts, that can eat skins, that can eat all the fruit that they want, all the veg that they want, and not have any issues. Whereas I look at a kidney bean and I get a blockage. But fruit is my main restriction. There's a lot of fruit that I can't eat. I can eat berries. It's just other things that I can't eat. And I've just found, like, over the years, especially with regards to, like, losing the weight that I've packed on, I've had to be brave and try new foods and get back into eating salads and vegetables and everything else, just as well as anything, just to give a bit more variety to my diet that just doesn't involve chicken and potato.
Yeah. You need to do a podcast on all this as well. I feel like this is another hour's chat.
Yeah, food definitely is. So anybody wishing to get into some serious gym going without worrying about stomas or hernias and needing to be put through your paces, DC versus UC, Danny Kelly is the person to talk to about that. You changed your Instagram, didn't you, Danny, about 4 or 5 months ago to be more inclusive for your gym rather than just general day-to-day?
It was more, in truth, it always started as a private one. It was just a normal private Instagram. And then you know, my whole thing about awareness is about real awareness. You know, this is a conversation that we've had many times. And
yeah,
a lot of the stuff I would put up would just be me out with the kids, me out doing different things and stuff like that. But the more I did that and the more I started promoting me in the gym with my son more than anything, people started asking questions. So, and the more questions I got asked, the more advice I was given, the more people would come back, and it just started to build up with that. So I thought, I'm going to change it. But instead of starting a new one, professionally, for awareness, I left that one as it is, took out a lot of the old stuff, started a personal one, and put all the personal stuff back in there. So the difference since then has been phenomenal. I get asked a lot of questions. I get people do message me on a daily basis asking me things. So the reason I did it was I seem to be indirectly helping more people than I expected to be without the intention being there. So
yeah, there's not enough men's accounts, especially men's accounts that are raising awareness, that is more about obviously everything in its entirety, and obviously being able to get fit and stay healthy after having your stoma surgery. I mean, I've been talking to you for years. I think I started talking to you back when I first started my accounts, and Danny's always been a good one for advice, apart from telling me to hang upside down to try and do my laterals. And I was like, I can't even get off the floor.
Good advice. But no, you say that.
Advice, I just can't do it.
In truth, the more people came for help, the more I wanted to help people. So it actually, it changed my whole perception, my whole, you know what, mentally it helped me as well to be actually have people reaching out. You know, we did something about mental health a while ago, and the amount of messages privately from guys who didn't want to speak publicly, but still to be able to help them was really warming. So that's why I genuinely do get messages on a daily basis of people asking how to do certain things. And I'm always careful. I'll never just say, right, we'll go in there, lie flat on the bench and put 150 kilos on that. It's not that simple. Prime example was a guy recently who was complaining he could bench press 110, but couldn't get to 120. And my immediate response is, why are you trying to go to 120? Go to 112. Go to 112 and a half. Go to 113. Don't just bang 10 kilos on.
You always have to do it in increments, though. I think the most that I can do is 15. Obviously, standing with dumbbells, I can pull more if I'm on the machine. But I wouldn't try and do that at home because I just caused myself massive injuries. And plus, trying to get a hold of dumbbells during lockdown and COVID was fun and dandy.
It was. But the thing is, everybody's different, and I try to treat everybody differently. So no matter who asks for advice, it's understanding what level they're at. And it's not very easy to do, but I have no problem taking the time to ask those questions and to help people.
But that's the thing, though, isn't it, Danny? It always takes time. It's not something that you can do instantly. It takes time to build up to the level that you're at. And obviously, you've been it for years.
Yeah, years and years, and a lot of research, even if it's just, you know, learning yourself. The only reason I got a PT qualification was for me to learn myself. I didn't actually get it to train people. I have a full-time job. I don't have time to train people. The odd few people I have helped train, they've seen success and seen results. I mean, you've seen my son. You've seen the difference him in 6 months. He's gone from this skinny little kid, and he's got no neck at the moment. His arms. I was talking to him the other day, and I'm like, I'm angry. You know, that's took you 6 months. It took me 7 years. You know what I mean? It's gone full circle. And I always had this thing. I want to do a muscle up. So you do a pull up and you go straight up into a dip. Years and years I want to do that. And I've barely got my arms to hear him like that. Up he goes. It's I'm very proud of it. But at the same time, a little bit like, I just want to really get and I don't think his mother's too happy either, because I think she's a bit fed up with the fact that every time there's a friend of hers in the house or a female in the house, he comes strutting down in his towel all of a sudden, you know. he's a boy now. He is. He's a boy. He's nearly 17-year-old, and he thinks I don't see him. He's in that gym with his phone in the mirror. He's giving it this where he pretends he's talking to someone. I know what he's doing. I can see him.
He's just doing what his dad does on Instagram, isn't he?
He's my photographer, though I don't take selfies.
Ah, wicked. Oh, Jake's too young to do that for me.
What about you, Rachel? Because like anybody wanting to get into jogging, running, wanting to think about doing a half marathon or even a 10K,
Rachel, don't ask me. that is not what I'm here for. I'm more likely to be able to tell you how to make Victoria sponge than be able to tell you how to run.
Oh, got a good recipe for that.
I was a DT teacher one night and did a bit of baking and that. So anyway, what I did is I literally just went out. I just started trying. I didn't follow anything. I obviously followed the advice and didn't start doing anything for 6 weeks post-op. I'm lucky my husband's really fit and active and knows what he's on about. So he's obviously been helpful in that. And I think as well, the main thing that helped me, I think if I was to give anyone any advice, I went into my op the fittest I could possibly be for the state of my health at the time, which helped me recover fairly quickly and helped me when I started fitness again. I think it's easy when you know surgery's coming and you're thinking this, you know, your life's going to change for the better, that you can kind of rest on your laurels and think, oh, well, you know, I'm going to have this done soon and then everything will change. And sometimes I think it's the worst you can do. I think you should really like try and prepare yourself and be as strong mentally and physically as you possibly can be. It's just only going to make your recovery better.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I don't talk a lot about this, but a lot behind the scenes, obviously, I go to a physio once a month. I do a lot of rehab exercises, obviously, because of my arthritis and because of some of the issues that I have. I do a lot of rehab with like resistance bands, and I have a step box indoors as well, and I have to do squats and stuff with resistance bands, not including the hiking that I do. So yeah, if you ever just want to like get into walking or just kind of get yourself more active, then obviously my inbox is always open. I'm not just there to talk about that Barbie butt surgeries and other things. Places I can, I do talk. I don't share as a lot about obviously behind the scenes, because obviously my health isn't great. I just kind of feel like that it's not going to upset people, but if anybody is going forward to having surgery and then learning, obviously I've kind of found out like kind of like 4 years after having my surgery that obviously I've got arthritis that's progressive, that's I've got psoriatic arthritis, obviously my hands swell up. Obviously I've done bag change videos on like how to change one-handed when you can't even move your hand and bits like that. So yeah, if you want any advice, obviously my inbox is always open, not just surgery related, because I do get a lot of that. Obviously most of mine's always surgery related and like how did you find recovery and that kind of thing. So yeah, I'd like to say a massive great big thank you to both of you for taking part. Hopefully this will help people. If you want any advice from Danny, then obviously it's DC_versus UC on Instagram. You've got Rachel, who goes under Gutsy Mum, also on Instagram. Am I the only one that's got a Facebook account, or do you have Facebook accounts as well?
I don't.
No.
Okay, just me then. you can find me under Crohn's Fighting across obviously Instagram, Facebook and Twitter, but I'm not as so active on Twitter these days. For all of you listening, if you are wishing to sample any products that have been mentioned during this podcast, if you go to www.pelicanhealthcare.co.uk, you can request samples from there. Obviously, I will be back with another podcast soon, and it will be another one with Rachel soon. So watch this space. So honestly, guys, thank you so much for taking part, and we'll be back with another podcast soon. So bye, guys.
Cheers.